All right, everyone, welcome to Podcast Recovery. We are your hosts, David O.
and Eric V.
Today we are joined by our special guest, Carly. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm fantastic. I had a good day of work. You know, it seemed fast but slow at the same time. It was weird. Ever wonder that?
You seem a little off today.
Thank you. Where are you from, Carly?
Catonsville, Maryland.
Born and raised?
Oh, yeah.
All right. And when were you first?
Catonsville School. Yeah.
Okay. We have two Catonsvillers in here. Catonsvillians? Catonsvillers?
Catonsvillians. I don't know.
Catonsvillians.
Villians.
We'll call you Villians.
I don't know, actually.
It sounds close to villain, and I think
that's why I like
you.
It.
Like civilian?
No.
Civil.
Civilian. Yeah. I don't like it. Moving on. Civilian. When were you first introduced to recovery?
I don't know, that's kind of a tough question. I mean, with recovery myself, it was like 6-7 months ago. Mm-hmm. But my dad, growing up, I remember him having problems with addiction, but he wasn't necessarily in a recovery program.
Okay, all right. And how much clean time do you currently have?
6 months and 16 days.
Wow, fantastic.
Do you know that off the top of your head, or did you look at your app before you
I
came
looked
here?
At my app before I came here.
I don't have the app anymore. I used to have the app. Yes, there's an app for that, people. You can count your clean time.
I have two apps.
Many apps. I also do have two apps for that.
I used to, like, know the minutes and everything, and it would, like, give me, like, updates on my phone.
Yeah, it's depressing.
What?
I found my old phone from, like, 6 years ago.
That's not depressing.
It had the clean date on it, and I looked at it, and I was like, that's depressing.
All right. Well, without further ado, we are going to allow Carly to share her experience, strength, and hope with us and the audience, so I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right. So I guess I'll just give a little bit of background about myself. Like I said, I'm from Catonsville, born and raised. Mm-hmm. The youngest of three, the youngest girl in the family, had an older sister 4 years older than me, and the oldest sister was 12 years older than me, so a little bit of a gap.
Yeah.
Just put it in perspective, her high school graduation was with my kindergarten graduation.
Wow.
So
I'm guessing she was the oops baby?
I think I was.
Okay.
Was unplanned. So,
you can't plan a baby. It just happens.
Yeah, well, they wanted to give my dad's middle name to somebody in the family, and the middle sister got it, so I don't think I was exactly planned, or it would have been mine.
I don't know. Your dad's his name could have been Carl.
Charles. Close enough.
Yeah, there you go.
Hardworking family, blue collar. I mean, had a pretty normal childhood. Parents treated all of us well. I mean, middle class family. Mm-hmm. I grew up playing a lot of sports. That's really, I guess, my first addiction was playing sports. It was every single day outside, had some sort of mm-hmm. ball and bat in my hand or playing basketball, always running around the neighborhood with the guys. So early on, it was, you know, I fit in with the guys better than mm-hmm. the girls. So right off the bat, I mean, I was, didn't feel like I fit in with other females.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess with, you know, I was, went through Catholic school for 15 years of my life. So
nice.
Religion for a while was shoved down my throat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, pre-K through 8, Catholic school, high school was Catholic school. So for a while there, it really shoved down my throat. And I think because of the way that it was approached, I wasn't too spiritual or mm-hmm. really believed in much of a God.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, it was a lot more structure than I would have liked.
Yeah.
So I guess I really started not feeling like I was good enough come middle school. You know, when I was hitting puberty and actually was supposed to be hanging out with the girls and
yeah.
not the tomboy running around with all the boys, I didn't feel like I fit in.
Yeah.
And it was hard for me. So with that, I actually started trying to find something to get out of myself, trying to take away that awkward feeling, that feeling mm-hmm. of pain, not really liking myself. So started with self-harm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was cutting frequently. It was the only way that I could not have to think about how I was feeling emotionally.
Yeah.
So it was taking that physical pain, which I could always deal with, and not having to think about how shitty I felt or how mm-hmm. much I hated myself at that time.
Yep.
But with that, it was probably 7th, 8th grade I started that, and soon after I started drinking.
Mm-hmm.
One of my good friend's moms had a drinking problem, so we took that, used that to our advantage a little bit.
Yeah.
So we were always over her house every single weekend because we knew we could get alcohol. It was mm-hmm. natural light that we were drinking all the time, but...
Ooh. That's gross.
Yeah. It was...
Sounds about right.
It sounds about right, that time. Yeah.
Yeah, so Natural Light, watermelon Smirnoff, which I didn't touch. And after
very girly. That's a very girly thing to drink.
Yeah, it was a little Eric, disgusting, a little sickening.
Eric, you love strawberry.
Didn't you mention? Okay, here we go. Is there something from a previous recording about your affinity for
Mike's...
Smirnoff or Mike's Hard or one of those fucking drinks?
I said it was my first drink. I didn't say I had affinity for it.
There was definitely...
Don't put words in my mouth. Back to the Natural Light.
Yeah, so we were drinking whatever my friend's mom had in the house. And, I mean, she was condoning it. She didn't care. It was like as long as we were at the house, she was happy. So she was giving us access to the alcohol, letting us do whatever we wanted. So
mm-hmm.
What age was this?
This was 8th grade, so being around 13 years old.
Ooh. Huh.
So.
Okay.
I mean, she wanted some, like, her daughter to be around and her daughter to like her, and she wanted to have that sense of friendship rather than the mother-daughter relationship. So we took advantage of that a little bit, started drinking regularly on the weekends around that time,
mm-hmm.
and... just like did whatever we wanted. She would give us her car keys and we would just take the car, like drunk 13-year-olds just driving around the neighborhood because she allowed it, like thinking it was normal, you know, like, okay, this is cool. Like she's going to let us take the car, do whatever we want. We'll go ahead, you know, roam around Catonsville.
Holy shit. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
That's intense.
So, I mean, it just got worse from there with seeing the parent condone it. And then even with my parents, I mean, I grew up having my family friends over every single weekend. My parents were always drinking, always smoking cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
It was a constant happy hours Friday, Saturday. So we thought that was normal. Thought that was the thing to do. Like, okay, drinking, you know, it's part of our life. There's nothing wrong with it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm going to go ahead and do.
Yeah.
So even, you know, going into high school – actually, freshman year of high school got bad pretty quick. My grandmother had just passed away at the end of my 8th grade year, so that was the first death I had really dealt with in the family, somebody who was close to me. She was probably my best friend. She lived right behind me growing up, so I was always over playing cards with her, just hanging out, you know. And that I took really, really hard. So And I didn't understand it, having somebody that close to me pass and then me being the one in the family to really take it the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't get over it. So the pain that brought about, I couldn't bear, and I didn't know how to deal with it. So the cutting got worse, the drinking got worse, and anything that I could do at that time, I was just looking again to get outside of my head.
Yeah.
So I think it was... probably end of freshman year is when I got introduced to weed. So me and a couple of my friends thought it would be really cool to, you know, hang out with the Catonsville Skater Boys. Like, so that was our goal that summer. So just, you know, hang out around the 7-Eleven, hang out around the trolley trail.
Yeah.
See if we could, you know, start hanging out with them, getting their crew. And at that point, we were going to do whatever we had to do.
I'm really mad Avril Lavigne's Skater Boy
like
just came into my head.
The Slev Crew? You're like a Slev Crew generation kid?
Slev Crew?
I don't even know what that is. What is that?
Like 7-Eleven Obies?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I am one of those.
Slev Crew.
I didn't know it had a name until
it
right now.
It does have a name. It does.
The Slev Crew. Okay.
The Slev Crew. Okay. You hung out, like, what, smoked blunts, like, on the trolley trail back there?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it had a little
like
spot.
I know where the spot is. I know exactly where that spot is.
Yeah, so I spent many, many nights down at that spot over the summer. So I think between 9th and 10th grade, I don't think I spent a single day home. During that summer, I would get up in the morning. One of my friends would walk to my house. we would walk to the other friend's house who lived down by 7-Eleven, and then the three of us would go down to the trail and spend hours down there. At that time, we were drinking Milwaukee's Best and just smoking blunts down the spot. So, yeah.
Oh, Milwaukee's Beast. That's bad.
Yeah,
that's
it was crazy. Gross.
That is a gross beer.
What, Milwaukee's the Beast?
Yeah, the Beast is bad. Ugh. Anyway, keep going.
But at that time, that was, I guess, when I started feeling a sense of danger that I liked, you know, just being out in public, not really caring whether or not we got caught, not caring who knew, and being down at that spot, there was times and times again, we were running from the cops, doing whatever we had to do.
Oh, yeah.
And that thrill that it brought, it was just, it was exhilarating. It made me just want to do it even more and more. So, with that, it was just after I started smoking weed, you know, I really didn't want to ever stop.
Yeah.
So that was something that come probably end of sophomore year into junior year, I started doing every single day. So not necessarily before school, but any day that I got home, I was smoking and doing what I needed to do, but I was still functioning. So I never saw a problem with it.
Yeah.
You know, as long as I could smoke and still get my work done, which at the time, for many years, I was like, oh, it's just, you know, taking down my anxiety.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. As long as I'm, you know, doing what I'm supposed to do, getting the grades that I'm supposed to get, like, nobody cares. And at that time, too, I mean, my mom and dad knew what I was doing, but they were the type, you know, I'd rather you have you do it in our house instead of somewhere where you're going to get in trouble. So I had, like, the attic room in my house. So my parents never came up there. And they knew what was going on, but my friends would come over, we would drink and smoke in my room, and because it was under their roof and we weren't driving, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
So I took that to my advantage, like...
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Every single night, just go straight up to my room, smoke.
Yep.
Every single night, and it's just the... Like, for years, smoking and drinking did it for me. Still able to play sports in high school. I played softball, I played basketball... played travel sports during that time as well. And I mean, the softball team that I played for, our coach was more about the camaraderie of the team rather than winning. So any tournament that we went to,
it was a beer league. It was a beer league
pretty much,
for kids.
Pretty much. He knew that we were like, you know, drinking and smoking in the hotel room. And what it was is that he was like, you girls are going to have rooms to yourselves. So there'll be three or four of you in a room and to really bring up, like, get you guys close and on the same page.
Team morale.
Exactly. So we we'd be stealing alcohol from the parents, from the coach.
Yeah.
I know I remember this one time specifically, we were down in Ocean City at a tournament and we were right next to the coach's room, and we're out on the balcony, he like slides his cooler right over next to like the rail that separates us, and he was like, you know, so the cooler's fully stocked. Just letting you know. So we're like, all right, taking that as an open invitation.
Good God.
So, but we were, that night we went down on the beach and we were like hanging out and smoking, and my mom calls and it's like, Carly, what did you do? You stole so-and-so's beer. Like, what's wrong with you? I was like, what are you talking about? We haven't even touched it. And she's like, the whole cooler's gone. He's pissed. So I'm like, all right, I really didn't do this time. Like,
yeah,
I'm telling you the truth. Every other time it's me, but I swear to you, it's not. So later to find out that one of our other teammates snuck onto his balcony, poured the whole cooler of alcohol into the bathtub, and nobody found out until the coach went and stepped in this just ice cooler in the bathtub to take a shower.
Oh, why would you do that?
That's a good question. It's like, if you're gonna do something, just take it. Don't.
Go drink it. Why would you pour it in a bath? That's not cool.
No, but I mean, just even being blamed for it, it was just like, I was always the culprit. Like, it was Carly. She did it for sure.
Yep.
It's like, but really this one time I didn't actually do it. I swear to you.
Yep.
But, just even like that, at that point it was sports were even coming to a social activity. Like it was about drinking. It was about getting high. It was about having fun. And once I started doing that, there was like no turning back. If I can function and play sports while I'm high, like, who gives a shit? Because that's what I had always loved was sports. That's what I always knew. It's what I was always comfortable in. So, but it was like the moment that I felt like I could do that while still having that feeling of getting drunk and getting high at the same time, I was all for it.
Were you ever, like, fucked up during a game?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. That's a fair question.
Yeah, we would...
You ever played sports fucked up?
Not really.
Oh,
I didn't really... Like, I have, but I was always, like, really, really bad.
I feel like it was awful. Yeah, when I used to play tennis and, like, platform tennis, it would just bring me to a whole mm-hmm. other level. Because, like, everything slows down. Like...
Oh, God.
It's like highlight real shit.
Oh, God, no. Okay, so true story real quick. Me and three other friends are getting high in like the fucking woods. And we're like, we get nice and good and fucking stoned in high school. And then we come out and there's like these like five middle schoolers like playing basketball at the fucking court. And I was like, dude, let's go play basketball with these kids. We'll fucking show them up. And... long story short, these kids are kicking our ass at fucking basketball. They're just running circles around us. And I was like, okay, everybody, huddle up. We got to figure this shit out because we're getting fucking embarrassed out here. Whoever gets the ball next, throw it to me. I'm going to kick it as far as we fucking can.
That was your plan?
And then we're going to run. And so, yeah, that was my fucking plan. And it worked. Sort of. Until, like, one of the kids, like, started running after us because I was, like, his... basketball. He's like, hey, you kicked my bat. Like, I got a good punt in.
Wait, weren't you the high schoolers in this situation?
Yeah, it was bad.
And the middle schoolers are chasing you.
Yeah, we were really high. Like, I just punted the ball and started running. So then one of them starts chasing us. My friend, like, fucking, like, Goldberg fucking spears him to the ground. And I was like, dude, that's like a fucking 12-year-old kid. And he was like, well, he was chasing us. I was like, all right, whatever. So anyway, yeah, I was terrible at sports while I was high.
Yeah, no, it like Eric said, it would just slow it all down, and my focus was 10 times better. Like, I couldn't, like, the running up and down the basketball court part was really hard.
Yeah.
But I felt like I never missed a shot. Like, I could see the basket clearly, fielding ground balls and softball. I remember in high school, it was 4:20, so we had a late practice in the gym that day, and I went out and smoked, and we played this Queen of the Court thing, so it was... just our coach just hitting us ground balls and we were all in a line and if you bobbled it, you were out. So it was down to me and my one really good friend and I ended up kicking her ass in it. And she was so pissed cause I was so high and I still beat her. Nice. And she would like never let me live that down.
Nice.
But, yeah, in high school other than sports, is when I started, I guess, really trying to fit in with the other girls, like not trying to be one of the guys anymore, which I grew up being with mm-hmm. the tomboy playing sports. So I found myself in the popular group of girls, which they were a bunch of bitches, which...
It was mean girls.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it was. Everybody else in my grade hated the girls that I was friends with. And, I mean, I wasn't necessarily that fond of them either, but they partied on the weekends.
Yeah.
So that's the upside of it. So mm-hmm. it was like, all right, we all have this common interest of getting fucked up. So, you know what? I'll stick it out, you know? So in school, I was kind of like friends with everybody. But once Friday hit, it was just how do we get high? How do we get drunk?
Yeah.
And there was this one time, actually, it's a sad story because one of my good friends in high school, her sister ended up getting, while we were junior year, ended up getting a brain tumor. Ooh. And she was at St. Jude's, so her parents were gone every single weekend with the younger sister, so we took that to our advantage and threw parties at her house, and it was every single weekend because they would be gone for like 2 months at a time. Mm-hmm. And there was this one time we... short on money, so we decided to all bring in our change and collect them and take it to a Coinstar. So I brought in the Skippy peanut butter jar just to collect our change, and people started asking what it was for. So we were like, oh, well, it's to try to raise money to get so-and-so Christmas presents and send them down to St. Jude.
Oh, no.
And just to, like, try to play it off, and people in the school started donating to us.
Oh, no.
We get to Coinstar and had 300 odd some dollars to go just spend on alcohol and drugs.
Oh.
Yeah. It was bad. I mean, I still feel pretty guilty till this day, but...
It happened. We do shit like that. That's what fucking addiction and shit will do.
And I remember standing at the Coinstar just jumping up and down like, yeah, we have so much to spend. And it was just like how we got this. It was horrible.
Yeah.
But right around that party time is when I started, changing interest into guys, too. So instead of looking to be friends with him, trying to find a little bit more. But I never felt, I guess, good enough. So one of the guys that I grew up with in the neighborhood, we always kind of had this thing on and off where it was nothing feelings wise. We just, I was like the girl next door.
Yeah.
So just growing up with that, it was just like all he wanted was a hookup or sex or whatever it was. So when I was interested in guys, that's what I thought they were, that they were looking for. So, you know, when I started partying on the weekends, I started just, I guess any guy that I saw interest in, it was like, okay, like, let me just throw myself at him, see what happens. So I around junior year is when I started sleeping around with some people. And then one weekend I was at a party, met this guy, slept with him, and then he wanted a relationship out of that. So I was like, okay, like, this might be good, but we'll see. So, but it was somebody that I just, again, just partied with, drank, smoked. And then there was, we were dating probably for only 3 months, and it was, then he tried to force himself on me. So he didn't get very far. I was not, not an easy target, to say the least. But after that, it was like, I trusted him. I, you know, put my faith in him. If he wants somebody who supposedly really has feelings for me can do this to me, like, what's the point of a relationship? What's the point of having feelings? So it just, from that, it was this feeling of not being good enough. And just, that kind of just stemmed even further and further. I was not feeling good enough in any aspect of my life, whether it was with a guy, with the friends I was with, then it went into playing sports, and even with grades. So I was always a pretty good student, but and my parents always hounded me, but I, like now looking back at it, it wasn't that I wasn't good enough for them. It was the expectations that I was setting for myself. Like I just wanted to be more and more. But after that relationship, it kind of like really started downhill from there. Started self-harm, started cutting again. And I guess it just, again, just kept going and going and going. It was more drinking, more smoking. And probably the, around the time that I started having suicidal thoughts. I never really, I never attempted, but it was always these ways, so, you know, how could I go about this? How could I kill myself? How, like, nobody would miss me, this and that. But I ended up getting myself through high school. After that relationship ended, I guess slept around even more, thinking that, you know, I'm not even going to develop feelings. I'm just going to get what they want out of me. I'm going to get it out of them and just go about life not feeling anything. Because what's the point of having feelings if it's always negative feelings and it's always hurtful feelings? But I ended up, like I said, finished high school, went on to college, but it wasn't necessarily the college of my choice. I had applied to a few different places. And I, the one that I really wanted to go to was out of state and didn't end up getting in. So that was kind of, you know, really crushed me there, thinking again that I was not good enough. But I ended up going to an in-state school where both my older sisters went to. Again, it was pushed on me by my family.
Where did you want to go?
Can
we say that? Yeah, we can.
You can say that. Fuck it.
Where North Carolina, Wilmington.
Oh, UNCW? Go Seahawks.
Yeah, I really wanted to go but...
Great school. Beautiful. Wilmington's beautiful.
It is.
Beautiful area.
No, I yeah, I've been to a bachelor party there. I like the area. Why do you know their mascot?
Because my my family would always vacation down there every year for, like, my entire life, right down at Riceville Beach, which is right next to Wilmington. And so, I'm very... and. That's where we did all our school supply shopping, was at UNCW. So when I would come back from, like, summer, I would have all these, like, cool college fucking binders and shit.
This is college world.
This is college world, bro. What are you, fourth grade? Fuck you. Go Seahawks. So anyway, you wanted to go to UNCW.
Yeah, so instead of being a Seahawk, I was a Seagull.
That is a huge downturn.
Yeah, the Sky Rat, so.
Sky Rat.
That might, it's okay. Go Salisbury. This podcast.
Go Salisbury.
Yeah.
Sky Rats.
But yeah, it wasn't really necessarily the college of my choice. Both my sisters went there, and my parents, oh, it's a good school, you should go, blah, blah, blah. But I felt like it was something that was being pushed on me, so I ended up just going with every intention of mm-hmm. transferring, mm-hmm. Which I ended up getting into UNC Wilmington on the transfer, but mm-hmm. I had already made the softball team at Salisbury.
Okay.
So after I had done that, there was not really any turning back. I mean, I had the first couple months of college were really rough. I wasn't happy. I didn't feel comfortable in my own shoes. Just trying to feel out, I guess, the lay of the land and this huge change in my life again. Mm-hmm. You know, finally, after 4 years of high school, and it took me at least two to get adjusted there, it was like, let's hit the reset button and try again. So. Yeah. Just being somewhere where I didn't want to be, not having any friends when I went there, this whole thing with not liking myself started again. So again, the self-harm started again. Mm-hmm. Of course, we were always drinking and smoking because mm-hmm. that's what anyway college kids did.
It's Salisbury.
So yeah, that was what we did there. And I thought it was completely normal. And then it was a couple months in where my coach kind of knew something was up and referred me to an on-campus therapist. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, like, I guess I'll give it a shot, try something different. I've never gone to talk to somebody before, and I had brought it up to my mom in the past mm-hmm. About seeing somebody because of things that I was feeling and not really liking myself. And she was, you know, oh, you're fine, toughen up. You don't need to talk to anybody, like this and that. So I never brought it up after that. And when my coach recommended it, I figured, okay, maybe this is a good chance to take advantage of it and see where it leads me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was only about maybe a month and a half I gave that a shot. Mm-hmm. I did not like the woman that I was seeing. It could have been that I was just not open to the idea after I started going there and I didn't want to open up about everything.
Mm-hmm.
But she was a real bitch. There was the mm-hmm. last time I saw her, you know, I went in, I was not having a good day. I was really upset and I wasn't ready to talk. And she was like, well, you know what? You're just wasting my time. So come back another day when you're ready to open up and talk to me. So after that, I was like, all right,
that's shit.
No more therapy for me if this is how it's going to go.
Oof.
But things got better after winter break when I went back and really started into playing softball and being one with the team.
Mm-hmm.
But it was early on in the season that I ended up getting a kidney infection and mm-hmm. was put on painkillers. Mm-hmm. So I remember sitting, like, my coach still made me come to the game, still made me come to the come to practice, but I'm sitting there on the bench loopy as shit, not knowing what's going on, but feeling great.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I had ever felt something different than just smoking and drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, after that, it was, how can I get more of this? So, I mean, I didn't use it all of when I needed, so I kind of used it responsibly, spread it out a little bit, you know, just when I wanted that extra high.
We're going to put big bunny ears on that one. Responsibly.
Yeah, I'd like to say that I was responsibly irresponsible.
You can totally use opiates responsibly.
No.
For a period of time, it's the Coke that fucks things up.
Yeah, and we'll get to that.
That's a valid point. It's a valid
no,
point.
But I used to say that I was using, I was responsibly irresponsible.
Were you just orally taking the pills or were you snorting them?
At that time, it was orally.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But going home that summer, I had one of my good guy friends here was an avid user. He was, you know, liked anything you put in front of him.
Yeah.
So we would always go on family vacation together, and that's when he introduced me to perks.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, all right, let's snort this. Like, you're going to love it, blah, 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 blah. As soon as I did that, it was like, all right, this is fucking awesome. Like, I've never felt this way, and I want to kind of keep going forward with this. So that was the beginning of sophomore year in college.
Yeah.
You know, going back to school, I had a good friend who was kind of into that shit as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I had it available to me there. But it was when I came home that winter break is when kind of things got a little over the top for me. I was hanging out with the one kid that I always used with, and his good friend that I was at the time interested in. And we were hanging out doing pills and they had heroin. So I was like, all right, yeah, we'll give it a try. Like, why not? If it's available, like, I at least want to try something once. And that, I guess, was a mistake.
Yeah.
So started snorting that at the beginning. And they were like, oh, Carly, you know, if you had the chance to shoot it up at least once, you should. So, again, thinking that was a good idea. Oof. And after I did that once, it was no turning back. It was one of the best feelings that I had ever felt. And so my winter break was spent doing heroin and smoking crack every single day. Oof. So that was a month and a half. And I don't know how. I don't know if my parents just ignored it or didn't know. But I was home sitting on the couch waiting for dinner, nodding out. Like,
yeah.
But the way that I just could not feel anything, it was amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
But that was pretty short-lived, of course, having to go back to school and start softball up again. A few of my teammates found out kind of what I had been up to over break and weren't going to let that fly anymore. So it was like kind of a not really, I guess, ordinary way of recovery. It wasn't really recovery at all because I substituted.
Mm-hmm.
But they were getting me off the crack and the heroin. So I spent days just at my teammate's house, you know, detoxing.
Ooh.
And I was getting my shit together. And as long as I was able to perform on the field, they were okay with it. And I was okay with it, but never stopped drinking, never stopped smoking weed. And at that time I was like, okay, I still have a friend around here who can get pills.
Yeah.
So I was still doing that whenever I could. Again, went home that summer, picked up the heroin and crack right away. And a couple months of that. And I got to a point where I did not like who I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not, going back to school, it made it easier for me, to kind of stop with that. But it was never, I never really had a recovery period or a period where I wasn't using something of a sort. So again, going back to school, getting drunk, getting high, using pretty much Oxy or Perks or even Xanax at the time, while we were drinking and partying. And then between junior and senior year, I got, introduced to some other things at Bonnaroo. So,
Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
So I went to Bonnaroo 2 years in a row. Yeah. Shrooms, acid, Molly.
Yeah.
I think the second year we went, I rolled for 5 days straight.
That's
the whole time that I was there.
That sounds about right.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. Now, looking back at it, and even at the end of that trip, I could not function anymore. Yeah. I was ready to go home.
Oh God, you're so drained. Yeah, I did a 3-day festival and fucking All Good. I can't remember what year it was, but literally people were like, "Oh, you went to All Good. What was it like?" I was like, "Man, I just remember one. That was it. I just remember that sound and a shit ton of lights, and that is it."
Yeah, the first time I took Molly, I was at a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert at Bonnaroo, and then we went to the Skrillex concert and got in the pit for Skrillex, and I had taken a gram of Molly for my first time.
Good God.
All at once, because my friend said, you know what, you don't feel it, just down the whole bag.
No.
I was like, okay, this is a great idea.
No.
So meanwhile, I'm in the pit at Skrillex, like, I need oxygen. I'm going to die.
Yes.
I need oxygen. I need water.
Yes.
And I don't remember half the night, but
no,
I live. So
that's good.
It's okay to look back at it and laugh now.
Yes.
But yeah, after doing that, it was like, that drug is fucking awesome. So, you know, anytime I can get that in my hands on that, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, Molly's great.
So second year I went to Bonnaroo, I think like I said, rolled 5 days straight, but I was at least once a week doing Molly at the same time, still drinking, still smoking weed. But I, after that summer, I could not touch that drug anymore. I think it had fucked up my brain so much that I just could not function.
Molly?
Mm-hmm.
How much did you eat Molly that summer?
A lot.
Not supposed to do that.
Yes.
No.
No.
Yes, I realized very quickly that that wasn't supposed to be that kind of drug.
Yeah, there's not many drugs that you're like, oh, you were doing that all summer. Oh, that's okay. No, that's not a thing with
that's
drugs.
That's not the one.
That's definitely not the one. Hallucinogens are not like that.
No, specifically Molly, though.
Yeah.
Or ecstasy.
I was never huge on. I was never huge on Molly.
What?
No.
What?
No.
What do you mean?
Dude,
that doesn't make any sense. You didn't like.
I don't. Are we gonna go into this?
This is supposed to be a recovery podcast.
This is a recovery podcast. I feel like we're glorifying it a little bit.
Sorry,
we're not gonna go into this. We're not condoning any drug use at all. Back to Carly.
You're wrong. Ecstasy. It's called ecstasy.
There's a reason it's called ecstasy. We're not doing this.
But with that drug and with a couple other drugs, it was like, all right, this is a party drug. It had its time and its place. But once I started using it frequently, it was like there is no time or place. It's all the time.
Yes.
Like it doesn't matter when or it doesn't matter where. It's now. So. But I felt like I graduated from drug to drug. You know, I had enough of this, so let's go on to the next one. But after I graduated college, finished playing softball for 4 years there, graduated with a degree in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
But when I came out of school, I had no fucking clue what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And again, it was like, let's hit the restart button, back to square one. Mm-hmm. I did not know my place. I felt like I did not have a place, did not have mm-hmm. a purpose. Both my sisters had good jobs. They had both gone on to go get their masters. And I felt like I, again, was being constantly compared to them. I wasn't good enough because I didn't have a job. I was going to live back at home with my parents. I had no plan.
Mm-hmm.
So just trying to find my place over a couple years, it just led to more drinking, more smoking, more just using in general.
And were your older sisters like pretty straight edge, or like were they like the quote unquote good kids?
Not the oldest one. She would tell me her stories of, you know, tripping on acid and thinking she was in the Mystery Machine.
Mystery Machine,
Scooby Doo.
Oh,
but the sister that was four years older than the sister that was 4 years older than me was more like a mom, or acted like my mom.
Yeah.
So it was, she was, I mean, I guess a goody two shoes. Mm-hmm. I mean, the middle child. So
yeah,
she was queen of her own country.
Yeah.
But I guess a couple years ago is when it really, really got rough for me. September of 2015, I believe it was a Friday where my oldest sister was, she was pregnant. She was early in her pregnancy, and she had a miscarriage.
Mm.
So she ended up getting some medicine to try to kind of flush that out. And come that Monday, I believe it was like September 28th, I woke up to go to work that day, and my mom ended up not going into work. And that's not like her. She doesn't miss a day of work, doesn't matter how she feels. And mm-hmm. I was trying to talk to her in the morning, and I know, like, what's going on? You know, Carly, I'm just feeling sick. I'm not feeling well. I'm just going to stay home today. And she wouldn't tell me really what was wrong. So I knew something was off from the bat.
Yeah.
But went to work. I worked a sales job at the time. Trying to hit my numbers, you know, there that day, making my phone calls. And I get a text from my sister, the middle sister, and who lets me know that my oldest sister had an ectopic pregnancy. So the medicine didn't work to flush it out, and mm-hmm. she was rushed to the hospital.
Mm.
So my middle sister found my oldest sister on the bathroom floor that day, unable to move. Oh. Had to rush her to the hospital.
Oh.
So we were going to take, I was responsible for taking care of my niece that night. My sister's child that she had already had. I guess my niece was probably 4 at the time. So I went home, you know, from work, got myself together, was getting ready to head over to my sister's to babysit, and my mom is still home, disoriented, not herself at all. She's like slurring her words like she's drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Starts a sentence, goes completely off topic. So I knew something was wrong. I started thinking maybe she had a stroke. So it turns out that she did.
Mm-hmm.
I went over, told my, like, relieved my one sister, so, and she went back and took my mom to the hospital. Of course, my mom was, oh, you know, I'm not going to the hospital unless I'm showered and I look good. So she went home, she showered, she walked herself into the hospital, and it turns out that she had a major stroke, and that was the day that my whole entire life changed.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened, so she went to the hospital that Monday night, found out the stroke. I was still contemplating going to work the next day, and I decided just to stay home. And I was going to go home, meet my dad at the house when he got home from the hospital. And I remember him coming home, being upset. You know, Kara, it doesn't look good. I think something's really wrong with your mom. I'm really worried about her. So, like, I just was like, Dad, get something to eat, get some sleep. So I decided, like I said, stay home from work that day. And I come down, and he's asleep on the couch, snoring. I'm not thinking anything's wrong. So I'm, like, starting to clean the kitchen, clean up a little bit, tidy the house up so we can get kind of our day started, go see my mom at the hospital. And at that time, I noticed his snoring going to just heavy breathing, the heavy breathing going to shallow breathing and not breathing at all. So I sat there. I was in the kitchen for like 20 minutes while this time was going on. And I tried to wake him up a few times while that process was happening. And I knew something was wrong, but I didn't want to, you know, like cry wolf. And it was Dad's just being Dad. Nothing's wrong. And I ended up having to pull him off the couch, call 911, and give him CPR. So paramedics got there. At the time, he did not have a heartbeat or anything. So they were able to bring him back, get his heart going again, but he never woke up from his coma. So it was like they talk about how families go, like people go down in threes, and I never expected it to be one family go down in three. So my sister that Monday morning having a 50% fatal surgery, my mom having a major stroke, and my dad going into cardiac arrest.
Jesus.
All within 24 hours of each other. So from that day on, like everything changed. I blamed myself for my dad since I was there when it happened. I tell myself over and over that I could have reacted sooner. I should have reacted sooner. So after that all happened, it was like I felt like I lost both my parents in one day. My mom spent a year in a care facility. My dad was in that care facility for 3 months. We kept him on life support, and his heart ended up giving out. So New Year's Day 2016. So it was just heartbreaking. They were married for 40-some years, and the last time they saw each other was when my dad left the hospital after she had her stroke. And we couldn't even tell my mom for 3 or 4 days that my dad had passed because of the condition she was in from her stroke. So it's just like those couple months really stick with me, and having to go visit her every day. I mean, she's been home for 2 years now. But after that, it was like she became my primary, like I was her primary caregiver. But like, so after my dad had, or that all happened, I, of course, had to take all my dad's medications to the hospital so they could see what he was on. But he just had gotten his pills, his oxys refilled that day before. So I went through them like it was candy. They were gone almost instantly. And once I stopped using those, again, I started using Coke more frequently. At that time it was, I had all these responsibilities. I had to keep up the house for my mom, and then my mom moved home. So then I had to, you know, take care of her. I still had to maintain a job. I had to maintain a life. So I was using cocaine every single day from the time I woke up to the time I went to bed. And it was like the only thing that I felt like that could keep me going until, I guess, maybe about 8-9 months ago when I realized how bad my addiction had become. I never thought it was a problem, you know, as long as I was functioning. But then I finally saw that my things had become unmanageable. I could not go to work without it. And I was using it at work, but then I wasn't able to still complete my job, my responsibilities at work. I stopped caring about my mom. It was like I was going through the motions. I was there to put her to bed, get her dinner, get her up, do the basic things that she needed, but I was not a human for her anymore. I could not be there for her. I wasn't her daughter. I was just a zombie going through everything. So yeah, that continued. There was probably about 3 months where I told myself that I would stop, and I had control over it, and I could stop tomorrow. And that tomorrow came, and I was just buying more. And it just continued like that until this past February. I had gone out with some coworkers of mine, and at that time, again, like, so at that day I had been using, we had a half day at work. So before we all went out to get lunch and drinks, I ran and picked up some Coke. Mm-hmm. So I was using from when we got to lunch till through the night. And we had gone out to the coworker's house and got really, 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 really fucked up.
Yeah.
I don't remember the last time I was that bad. And at that point in time, I think I just, it was a cry for help. Mm-hmm. I told them that night what was going on with me, how bad the addiction had gotten, how I can't stop, how I was using it at work, how I needed help. Mm-hmm. And I had thought about it for months beforehand, but I never had the balls to go through with it.
Yeah.
So finally, like, knowing, I guess I had an out by coming to somebody and knowing that they cared enough to help, was huge. So mm-hmm. that was on a Friday night. I went back to work for a couple days, and then it was that following Wednesday. I go into work, and the one coworker comes up to me and is like, "Come on, Carly, we're going to go ahead and take a walk." So I was like, "All right, where are we going?" She's she took me over to another building that in my workplace where my employers were sitting, and they held an intervention for me. So walking in blindly to, you know, my couple, two of my, like, I guess, superiors and the business manager and the employer himself. It was, I guess,
is this like a legit, like, intervention?
Yes.
Ugh.
So yeah, I went
this is
in.
Awesome.
They sat me down. Like, I mean, there wasn't anybody like you'd see on the TV
there wasn't
show.
The camera?
No, yeah. It wasn't like the TV show intervention, but it was. One of my coworkers had a letter written to me, but she never read it. She folded it up and put it away. Like, I think it got too much for her.
Chris Hansen was on the stool. Come here, Carly. Just take a seat. Just come over here. Take a seat.
But I had to sit in that build. They took me to the doctors to make sure I was, you know, okay, to make sure nothing was wrong with me. Because the business manager actually had cancer. And so she called up her doctor, her primary care doctor who sees her for cancer, and was like, one of my employers needs to come in. I need you to look at her. Here's what's going on with her. And it was funny because I'd never expected for people to be understanding of what I was going through. But they sat me down that day and were like, just like so-and-so has cancer, it's a disease. You have addiction. Like, that's a disease. And they compared it to her cancer, and I had never expected to be put in a situation like that.
Yeah.
To be understood about what was going on with me, and for them to tell me that I wasn't a bad person and that I'd made mistakes, but it doesn't define who I am, and that I could get help. And it was either that I'd get help or I would lose my job.
Yeah.
And from there, I went to the doctor. After that, I sat in a building all day at work by myself. And after the workday was over, had a couple of my close coworkers, who my friends, all kind of got together and were like, "All right, what's the next step? What are we going to do? Going inpatient, going outpatient, this and that." And at the time, they were pushing inpatient, but with the responsibility I have with my mom, there was no possible way.
It wasn't an option.
I knew that if, like, what, go away for 30 days in this perfect little world, you know, because Shepherd Pratt is like a vacation. But meanwhile, I'd be in this bubble and be worrying about my mother and who was taking care of her.
Yeah.
And she was my primary concern, which I guess is probably what got me into a lot of the trouble in the first place, is because I put myself on the back burner for so long. But I chose to go outpatient, had 8 weeks of, intensive outpatient program. Wasn't too excited about it, of course, at first. I thought this was okay, I'm going to get 8 weeks under my belt of being clean, not doing anything, kind of like a little bit of a break, and then I'll go right back out to drinking, smoking weed. Like, that's not a problem. I could always function with doing that. And after a couple weeks into IOP, I realized that just wasn't an option.
Yeah.
Being around other people who had problems of addiction, I finally was in a room where I felt like I was completely understood. Like, I can be open about who I was and what I felt, and there was no judgment. And for the first time, I had felt like I was where I belonged.
Now, was that at IOP or a, like, 12-step fellowship.
Well, it was it first started at IOP, mm-hmm. Where they didn't require a 12-step kind of program as a part of it, but it was highly suggested. So mm-hmm. if I figured I was going to be open and honest and I was going to really try to do this, that I was going to take suggestions and I was going to give a 12-step program a try.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to my first meeting probably 3 to 4 weeks into IOP. Like I said, it wasn't required, but it was suggested. So I gave, mm-hmm. I looked up some meetings, found some in my area and gave a Tuesday night meeting a try. When I went there, I was, of course, super nervous, felt like I wasn't sure if I belonged. And immediately I was comparing myself out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
It was a different crowd than I would have expected. But I figured if this is going to work, I'm not really going to just give one meeting a try and just be done.
Yeah, you can't just swing at one pitch and expect to hit a home run.
So I guess
softball pun.
The first meeting was a little bit of an older crowd, and so I guess it made me feeling a little bit uncomfortable. So the next night, tried a different meeting. When I showed up, everybody was super welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And just right off the bat, it was a good vibe. Like, I felt like I belonged.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I kept coming back. I mean, I tried a couple different meetings, but a few short weeks in, I decided to make that Wednesday night meeting my home group.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really just because of the people there. They were caring and loving, and it didn't matter if I was new or anything like that. They were friendly, and right away I had a connection.
Mm-hmm.
So after, you know, making that connection, I decided that this was something I was going to stick with. It wasn't going to be just the 8 weeks IOP and done. I was going to actually give this a shot and see if my life could get any better.
Mm-hmm.
During that time I was in IOP, I was also on a leave of absence from work. So I used that time to really focus on myself, do a mm-hmm. lot of self-care. I found myself back in the gym and doing things that I loved that I had forgotten mm-hmm. about. And it was such a great feeling to be able to, you know, pick up a basketball again or just go for a run or like just pick up a book and just read for enjoyment.
Yeah.
And after I fought being out of work for that long, but after I was a couple weeks into it, I was like, this is great. Like,
yeah.
Not that I want to do this all the time, but it is great to be able to take this time and focus on myself and put myself first, which I haven't done probably my entire life.
Yeah. That's Were you getting paid on the leave of absence?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice bonus.
Yeah. It was a nice surprise to, you know, look at my bank account and see that I was getting paid. So then that took that stress off of it. And then I could really enjoy it myself. So after that, I mean, I continued to just take suggestions, you know, after focusing on my self-care and realizing how I could feel like myself again, being an IOP and just being open to these new ideas, I figured, you know, they haven't steered me wrong yet.
Mm-hmm.
So why would I stop listening now?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they suggested like finding a home group, which I did almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And the next suggestion was to get a sponsor. So I wasn't sure how to go about that, but mm-hmm. Not long after that was suggested, I had a good opportunity. Had somebody come in, speak at our home group.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the moment she started speaking, I knew that she was relatable. I felt like I was drawn in by what she started talking immediately, and I could relate to what her story was. So,
Can we name drop? Let's name drop.
Yeah, I mean, Brad's only been mentioned on this fucking podcast.
Yeah.
So can we name drop?
Yeah, Allie B.
So Allie B.
Allie B.
So cool stripper chick.
The cool stripper chick. Cool stripper
But yeah, immediately when she started talking, I was like, this woman is awesome. Like, yeah. I need to get to know her.
She's awesome as shit.
And, I mean, she was friendly right away. She came up to me, gave me her number.
Mm-hmm.
I thanked her for speaking and let her know how much I got out of it. And she, next thing I know, she was inviting me to come to her home group that week. So mm-hmm. I felt like I could trust her right away, and things went from there.
Yeah.
Like, I was scared shitless to ask her to be my sponsor, but I went for it.
Yeah.
You know, I figured I've all these things that I've been doing are completely new to me,
mm-hmm.
and they haven't failed me yet. So, I mean, even if it hurts, you know, it's even if I get rejected, I mean, at least I tried, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously things worked out. I've asked her, you know, like maybe a month and a half into my clean date, like mm-hmm. ask her to be my sponsor. And we just finished the first step, so...
That's fantastic.
Cool.
Yeah, so it took me quite a while, but...
Yeah.
Just really working on that and getting to dive into myself and find out more about me has really helped mm-hmm. So far in recovery. You know, I've followed her suggestions, I've built a network, I followed my suggestions from my network, and even though everything so far has changed in my life... It has been a positive change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lately I have got a new job at work, so I will be working through the same employer, just a different position.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, really, really nervous about that. But it'll be positive change. I'll be starting grad school in a few weeks, get my master's.
Nice.
Scary, but again, positive change in my life.
What are you going for your master's in?
School counseling.
Nice.
So, and I will be moving. So we are selling my mom's house. So soon I will no longer be her primary caregiver and the responsibility will be my sister's. So as much as I miss my mom, it'll be a positive change for me. So, I mean, being clean 6.5 months, everything has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it is scary. I fear the unknown, but mm-hmm. I have not, you know, been steered in the wrong direction, and everything has worked out for the better so far.
Mm-hmm.
So with all of that, I mean, just being able to see what I guess I can accomplish and where my life can go now that I've stopped using drugs is amazing. The possibilities are endless.
Mm-hmm. And in such a short amount of time too.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's been hard. It has not been easy whatsoever. And there have been times where I've wanted to give up or I've wanted to use, but mm-hmm. where is that going to get me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's still going to be happening. I mean, life has showed up and it's still going to happen whether I use or not.
Yeah.
So, and I'm finally starting to deal with my feelings and understand my feelings and be aware of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just from this point on, I mean, like day by day, just one day at a time is the only way that I'm going to be able to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's where I'm pretty much at right now.
Fantastic.
Cool.
I have a quick question because I'm.
You
want to
go first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a first.
Yeah.
We're switching things out.
Look at you.
I brought a question out. Huh?
Yeah. Just with you, like what you said. Where you were like finding out what your feelings were, blah, blah, blah. Cause this is something that I did in, just throughout my life is I sort of like invalidated my own, my own feelings. Like I shouldn't be having mm-hmm. these. So like, I shouldn't be feeling this way, blah, 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 blah.
Or I should feel this way.
Or I should feel this way. Having expectations and just on myself and especially about my own feelings and not letting me feel my feelings even when they're bad. Mm-hmm. So what's that like for you? Like how has that changed?
Just like being more aware of it and mm-hmm. realizing that it is okay to feel this way. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I was told that you shouldn't feel that way or, oh, just suck it up or you're fine or,
yep.
this and that. And I always thought that I was in the wrong for feeling the way that I felt mm-hmm. and that there must be something wrong with me for that.
Mm-hmm.
But now being in this through IOP and now there's relapse prevention program that I am in and the 12 step meetings that I've been attending, I'm realizing that I'm not the only one that feels that way. And mm-hmm. to feel like I'm not alone has made me be okay, more okay with myself. I'm realizing that there's other people that can understand me and can relate to me and
yep.
knowing that it takes that fear away.
Mm. Fantastic.
Cool. What questions? Of course I have questions.
I concede to you, sir.
Of course I have questions.
I yield the floor.
So where do we start? We obviously start with Catholic school. So being someone who's an agnostic, I'm very baffled by people who are religious. Just doesn't compute. So, like, now you kind of gave like a certain sentiment when you talked about it. You're kind of like, you didn't sound too thrilled about it. But from what we were talking about before, it sounds like it's still kind of in your life, in a certain way. And like, does that affect your viewpoint on the whole like God thing?
That's tough. I mean, for a while there, I was, I guess, resentful towards my family and for shoving, you know, the Catholic faith down my throat. And then when things happened with my parents, I blamed God. I was angry for it. And but since being in recovery, that has kind of all changed. I mean, my God, I would say is my higher power is the God of the Catholic faith. And working now at a Catholic school, being kind of where what I know and where I grow up, I've kind of been able to find myself again and find that spirituality and that faith that I did have and be able to trust in something higher than me again.
Okay. So do you use that as also another form of, let's say, recovery? Another, you know, like, do you actively go to church?
I wouldn't say actively go to church on the weekends, but being in working at the Catholic school, we are focused around the Catholic faith and God every single day. And we do attend church at school. So that has helped. I mean, right, you know, a couple months ago at the end of the school year, I was sitting in church and finally felt at peace again, which I hadn't felt in a really long time. And to feel that has allowed me to come closer to with it. And I have been thinking about going back to church regularly on the weekends. I just haven't done it. But my prayer has, praying has picked up. It is something now that I do every single day.
Okay. Cool.
How do you, because this is like a big thing for anybody, like spiritual or religious, how do you implement your prayer? Like, what is it for you? Like, that's a generalized question.
What does prayer mean to you?
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about this, like, earlier today. Like, before you guys came over, I was actually walking between the house. I was like, what is prayer? Like, because, okay, so you're praying to something that you feel is real. And they're just fucking everything up, aren't they? These cats, man. And
we have cats and dogs in the studio, just for the record. In case you didn't hear them.
Definitely fucking change hopefully in a month. But so you're praying to something that you believe is like that can hear you. And from my viewpoint, did you ever see the movie Watchmen?
No.
Yes.
Okay, do you know when Dr. Manhattan
Yes.
is talking at the end about like how he's like, you know, I kinda wanna go off and like create some life of my own?
Yes.
Like my belief is like, since like coming from like an agnostic or deist point of view, depending on the day, is, you know, why I feel like it's kind of like, what's the word? Like narcissistic to believe that like an entity would, you know, to think that like I'm important enough for an entity to like listen to me. So like the way, so kind of like, that's just my viewpoint. So like, I respect your viewpoint as well, but like what I was kind of thinking about walking over, I was like, I guess if like something I could get down with is the idea that, you know, prayer is more just, you know, say like when someone's like, you know, and I kind of hate when people say this, but it's just like, just pray for me. And I'm just like, shut the fuck up. But like, but I can get down with the idea of, you know, that asshole like says that to like 50 people. And now like, let's go by averages. Let's say like 30 people actually do it. Okay. And, those 30 people's thoughts go into like, you know, some sort of energy consciousness that then like directly affects the outcome of that situation. Like I can get down with that sort of.
That's kind of
like the law of attraction. You know, what you give out to the universe is what you get back.
Yes. But also, I think it's also a little bit
of The Secret, you know?
Yeah, but I think you're going with a little, like, Ian Malcolm butterfly effect kind of thing.
A bit.
Like, butterfly flaps its wings in Peking and it rains in New York City. sort of thing.
That was a weird noise.
Sorry, I didn't.
No,
itch.
I was like, what was that?
Scratch your yoga pants.
So yeah, what does prayer mean to you?
Just for prayer, it's just any time that I can have to myself to be able to have some contact with my higher power. Usually it would be first thing in the morning, but sometimes it's in the middle of the day. Just where, you know, I can really think and focus on what is going on within me and around me, and whether it's asking for guidance or just thanking him for being clean another day. It's just any time where I can, I guess it could be compared to meditation. I mean,
so
just
moments of self-reflection, like almost like mindfulness.
Yeah.
I want to put my two cents in. Cause I was, also raised, in a Christian based faith. I was raised Presbyterian.
Cool.
Eric's like, okay, that sounds nice. But yeah, like as I grew up and drugs became more important, obviously that went by the wayside. And then coming into recovery, I had to sort of like find my own thing. And I didn't know what that was because like throughout addiction, I was constantly like you said, like a lot of people have said, like blaming God, having a very contentious spiritual relationship. But I didn't even know what it was because I didn't necessarily believe in a Christian God or anything like that. But coming into recovery and back in addiction, like I've always done a lot of spiritual reading. Like I've read the Bible. I've read, obviously that's also the base for the Jewish faith because the Old Testament is the Torah. I've read the Quran. I've read the Eightfold Path of Buddhism, a la my sponsor. And recently it's really like turned to a whole separate thing, which is like an older form of heathenism / paganism.
Okay.
And I'm polytheistic, so I believe there's many gods, and all my different gods embody a different thing. So depending on what's going on in my life, I get to sort of aim it at a different idea or different focus. And like what comes with, I'll say it. Like it's a Norse.
Yes, I was hoping it was Norse.
You son of a bitch!
I'm so happy about this.
Yes, so I pray to Odin. I pray to Odin. I pray to Frey. I pray to Thor. Yeah,
so is Thor like? Is that like a religious experience for you when you watch the movie?
It
I mean,
kind
not the first
is.
Two, but the, you know,
yes,
the last one.
Yes, because okay. Like he is the god of strength, but he's also like the god of like the mountains and Odin, like constant, like if I'm searching for like wisdom or peace, I go there. And but there's these, it's the nine noble virtues, and it's just things that I can do, which really like go into like the second and third steps, which is like returning myself to sanity with that mindfulness of how can I take these nine noble virtues, which are the basis of like, it's like loyalty, hospitality, industriousness, all these things that I can do myself to align my actions with the actions of Thor.
I'm so happy about this.
You Thank
have
you.
No idea.
Most people laugh at me, and it's really not. It's
no,
because nice.
You know what? I've always wondered. Nice. You know, because why is something pagan and other things religious? When did that like? Because like the Greek. Okay, it's so like Greek mythology.
Well, it's polytheism and monotheism. Like she believes in one god, and I believe in many.
Well, yeah, but so. Like there's a different connotation between like. You know, like, it's like, oh, well, like... You
yeah,
know,
if you call somebody a heathen, it's like certain right? people think it's insulting. Yeah. I don't. I love it. Call me a heathen.
For the record, what is shaved into your head?
They are actually Norse runes, and it says, Hail Odin, on the side of my head. It is shaved, it is shaved into my hair.
All right, moving on.
We've digressed
moving
too far.
Moving on. Okay.
Thank you, Odin.
So...
Question.
What did you expect from your first meeting?
Ooh. Oh. Interesting.
I don't really know if I had many expectations.
She had great expectations.
I really wasn't sure what to expect because, I mean, going into IOP, it was completely different from what I thought. Maybe the expectations were the same there, just people talking about their feelings and...
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not group, though. Groups,
right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
tell me what you think. Tell me what you feel.
but I don't know. I didn't really know what to expect. I was just nervous. Like, yeah. I was mm-hmm. all in my own head about... I mean, I was being self-centered about what people are going to think of me or what people are going to say about me and this and that. And I wasn't really expecting much. I wasn't sure what, because I had never been in an environment or in the rooms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. So you mentioned cutting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions I like to ask people is, because like this is something that, you know, everyone struggles with, currently and all the time, I struggle with work. That is my addiction, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I will just admit that. So, you know, stuff like cutting, you know, like I remember first time I got, one of the times I got clean, I got heavy into cutting. So like, you know, how has addiction manifested itself since being clean in your life? And in what ways do you try to combat those
manifestations?
Yes. And triggers.
And triggers, yeah.
Yeah, I did not understand the whole concept of it manifesting itself in other aspects of my life.
Mm-hmm. You're drinking an energy drink, right?
Right, but I was going to say I quickly came to realize it.
It's 9:30 at night.
That has been one of my addictions is the Monster Javas.
Yeah.
I drink them regularly. I have gotten better with mm-hmm. it, because I was going by 7-Eleven on my way here, I decided to pick two up. I drank both of them.
Wow.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I drank one in the car while waiting, and then
it's
I drank this one.
30.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, these are my first two in a couple weeks. So I have That's gotten good. Better with it.
That's good.
So when did you plan on sleeping today?
But she's mindful of it. So
yes, dude, I became mindful of it very worse. Quickly.
You can call me out.
No, I know about my issues with energy drinks.
He's deflecting.
It's fine.
Yeah. So, but energy drinks is one of them. Mm-hmm. I was never really big into smoking cigarettes ever, but I picked up vaping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as soon as I got into the rooms.
That happens in the rooms. Yeah. Oh, yes.
I picked it up as like a social thing, like after the meetings and before the meetings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted something to be able to, I guess, fit in. I don't smoke, so I was like out there kind of wandering around by myself. You know, this Lots group was smoking cigarettes, yeah. This group was vaping.
That's hard. I've never, because when I came in, I smoked.
Yeah, so.
Who the fuck do you talk to if you're, like, new and you're not smoking?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't like the smell of cigarettes if, like, to be around them if I'm not smoking something myself. So it quickly became like an addiction of mine. I went out, got a vape, and then that one wasn't good enough, so I got another one.
Yeah.
And now that I'm on my third one because it's just kind of gotten.
It advances
progressively. So you're vaping.
Yeah, it's.
So okay. Okay. You're not doing drugs,
right? Yeah. And well, I have
kind of not doing drugs.
Realized the obsessive compulsive behavior that I have with shopping and spending money.
Ah.
I have used that
playing a little bit of Macklemore, you know.
I've used it to make myself feel better. Like if I'm stressing out about something or, you know, having a bad day, I immediately want to go spend money and I'll go buy myself. I think I bought myself three new pairs of like athletic shoes in the 6 months that I've been clean.
Nice.
Because, you know, if I'm working out again, I need new shoes.
I felt that.
And
this
I've
weekend.
Always justified it.
Yeah.
You're going through a lot of shoes.
Yeah.
So two months. Is how long a pair of shoes lasts.
Yeah.
I bought a new cologne. I like smelling nice. It's actually, I actually found out it's part of like my amends to myself because when I was like growing up and through.
Buying something for yourself like cologne.
It's.
Do you hear this?
Okay, guy? No.
He smells
totally
really good today.
That's thank you.
It's justification and rationalization.
I agree.
No,
and it's totally a manifestation.
Please, go ahead.
But
I want to hear this.
Me smelling nice is a part of my amends to myself because, A, when I was a little kid, I was the stinky kid in school. thank you for laughing. Thank you for laughing.
Wait, what was the kid in Charlie Brown that I, always had
I
a
was
dust
Pigpen. Oh, yes. It was Pigpen. I was fucking Pigpen, okay? I stunk. You want to know how bad I stunk? When I went to bed, my parents had to take the clothes off of me to go wash them and then put them back on me before I woke up. Otherwise, I would freak out. Because I
wait, that's was a specific. Whole other issue. I was like,
I'm an addict. I have lots of issues. So anyway, I was the stinky kid. Then in addiction, we're all the kind of the stinky kid because fuck showering when you can get high. So I was a stinky kid for a long time.
Really believe
and I want
that
to smell
stink.
Good.
Like so, I mean, when I was getting high, I wouldn't shower good. For like days.
Yeah,
but I'm not really doing much. Like, you know what I mean?
Dude, you stink.
No, I don't. I disagree. I think
you
if you're not
stink,
sweating,
dude.
You're not really...
Dude, you stink.
Well, David, you smelled really good.
Thank
walking
you.
Walking in today. I thought it walking down the driveway into here, but...
Thank you.
I think it's a rationalization.
Whatever. I smell
it's
good.
Fine.
I smell better than you. Whatever. Next question.
That's... it's okay.
Point.
So...
I have one final question. So, are you excited about recovery?
I am. And that surprised me. I would definitely surprise myself with being excited about it. At first, it was something that I had no interest in. Like I said, I was going to make it through those 8 weeks and go back to, you know, some sort of using, whether it was just smoking weed or drinking.
Mm-hmm.
But when I realized what could happen being clean and mm-hmm. being living in recovery and how great my life could be
mm-hmm.
and being present in my life
yeah.
is what makes me most excited because that's not, I was not present whatsoever before when I was using. And over these past 6 months, I've been able to be present for my boyfriend, my sisters, my niece, mm-hmm. my nephew, and my mom. And that has just meant the world to me to be able to do that. So knowing that there is hope
mm-hmm.
makes me excited.
Yeah. Do you like feel like you've gotten like some of your life back?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I never thought that day would come,
mm-hmm.
but I finally feel like myself again, you know, like I, mm-hmm. I have some worth. There's things that I can accomplish. And I think for the first time in my life, I actually am setting goals for myself.
Nice.
Cool. So it's a huge change.
Yeah. It's a big deal. All right. What do you have any like, final words of wisdom for the newcomer?
My words of wisdom would just be open to suggestions mm-hmm. and be willing to give them a try. Because if you don't try something different, then you don't know what the possibilities are.
Yeah.
So, and that was the biggest thing so far in my recovery is I jumped right in at all or nothing. And it's worked.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we would like to thank you for joining us today and sharing an amazing story.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Cue the clap track. It's a golf clap, apparently. Thank you, Eric. Here at Podcast Recovery, we are aiming to expand the scope of support for recovering addicts. Accessibility and convenience of helpful services is paramount to combating addiction. We work to bring the message of recovery to every addict, wherever and whenever it is needed. We believe that a powerful voice of recovery should be obtainable, practical, and at the touch of a button. Every addict deserves to hear a message of hope, and Podcast Recovery is here to provide it. So please check out our Facebook page, our Facebook group, look us up on Twitter, go to our website.
Follow us,
subscribe, give us your listens, review us, go to your apps, rate us, give us 5 stars, 2 thumbs up, because we do a good job here.
Yeah, just love us.
Humble,
right?
Humble brag right there, you know, pseudo humility right there. Anything else? No?
No, I think we're good, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks,
great.
Thanks for joining us this week. Thanks again, Carly. Everybody, stay clean out there. Stay safe.